Please welcome to the stage Florida Housing Coalition CEO, Ashan Nesbitt.
Good afternoon, everyone. If everyone could take their seats and bring it down just a little bit. I'm really pleased to introduce this next gentleman. His name is Stacy Spann. He is the head of housing access and affordability with Wells Fargo. You can read his full bio in the app if you have that. The important thing is that he's a Morehouse man. So I just wanted to make sure I say that, but please welcome to the stage, Stacy Spann.
Thank you.
Okay, all right. Good afternoon, folks. I'm gonna point out something. I flew here from Baltimore and I've been up since 3:30, so I'm gonna need just the tiniest bit more than that. So I'm gonna say, good afternoon, folks. All right, let's go. All right. I didn't bring the hurricane. I promise you that was not me. Thank you so much, Ashan. That from a rattler to a maroon tiger, that just means a tremendous amount. Thank you for all that you're doing as well. And a huge thank you to the Florida Housing Coalition for hosting the 36th annual statewide affordable housing conference. This is such tremendous attendance. So thank you to you all. And of course, I'd be remiss if I didn't give a quick shout out to my Wells Fargo compatriots, my comrades in arms, and the other bankers too, but Wells Fargo for right this moment. Wells Fargo's, ladies and gentlemen. So at Wells Fargo, we believe that every single person should have access to a high quality, affordable place to call home. So we believe that as you believe that. We know there's a lot of work to be done. If not, this room would not be full. And as we look across our entire housing continuum, this system that we've built that has so many challenges, and we examine the many facets of housing access and affordability in our country, it's clear that we need many solutions. So we have a role to play in that at Wells Fargo. You all have a role to play in that. What we know for sure is that we can move together on affordable housing as common ground. It's a nonpartisan topic. We can work through disparate political and philosophical differences to address key issues and advance important causes like this. That's especially true in this incredible state of Florida. So I want to point out a couple things about our track record. Over the past 5 years, Wells Fargo's philanthropic investment to Florida totaled roughly $56 million, including more than $1.8 million in disaster relief, which I think is actually being navigated right now, right, for this next wave of disaster, unfortunately. And that's in 3,800 grants in support of housing, small business, financial health, sustainability, and more. Of that $56 million, over $17 million had a focus on housing affordability. $17 million. So beyond philanthropy, our team is working really, really hard, and we volunteered 198,000 hours in Florida to support nonprofits and the causes that they are supporting. We're proud of our longstanding philanthropic relationship in this state, our partnership with the Florida Housing Coalition, and we're also proud to be a lead sponsor of this conference. And so now I have the distinct pleasure of introducing our keynote speaker. And this woman has championed social justice and human dignity, advocating against discrimination and oppression in all of its forms. She's the president and CEO of the Southern Poverty Law Center and a graduate of the Columbia University's School of International Public Affairs, and we share that in common. Please join me in welcoming Margaret Hong.
Good afternoon, everyone. Oh, you know, you all were much nicer to Stacy than that. Let's try that one more time. Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you. That was really lovely. And thank you, Stacy, for that generous introduction. I want to thank Ashaun and the Florida Housing Coalition for inviting me to be part of your lunch here today. And I'd like to thank each of you for your commitment to ensuring that people here in Florida have a safe place to call home. I'm especially pleased to be here as we honor the lifetime work of the coalition's former CEO, Jamie Ross, and all she has accomplished as a champion for affordable and inclusive housing. Let's give it up for Jamie. In 1958, Eleanor Roosevelt delivered remarks to the United Nations in which she explored a profound question about the nature of human rights. She asked, "Where, after all, do universal rights begin?" She went on to say, "In small places close to home, so close and so small that they cannot be seen on any map of the world. Yet they are the world of the individual person. The neighborhood they live in, the school or college they attend, the factory, farm, or office where they work. Such are the places where every man, woman, and child seek equal justice, equal opportunity, equal dignity without discrimination. Unless these rights have meaning there, they have little meaning anywhere. Human rights, in other words, begin at home." This terribly difficult week in Florida underscores that truth. The horrific, hate-fueled shooting in Jacksonville and the hurricane heading toward us right now remind us how much cultivating safety, belonging, and shelter for all people matters. I know that this meeting has been affected by the latest weather threat, and I hope you will all prioritize your own well-being and that of your loved ones. It reminds us why the work that each of you do matters, because where we live matters. Where we call home matters. It matters to our safety. It matters for feeling seen and appreciated by our neighbors. It matters for future opportunities for our children. It matters for accessing healthy soil, breathable air, and safe drinking water. And increasingly, it matters for how much voice we have in shaping our community and our democracy. It's no secret that we've long been a country of justice by geography. At the time of Ms. Roosevelt's speech in the late 1950s, racial discrimination in housing was entrenched through federal, state, and local policies. There was, quite literally, a system of state-sponsored segregation. The nation was also well into an era of urban renewal that meant the destruction of Black homes, businesses, and thriving communities to clear space for federally funded highways and new office buildings in downtown areas. Black families have been displaced again and again, pushed out of their neighborhoods, and forced to start all over. Such conditions inspired just a few years ago what would become, or just a few years later, what would become a landmark moment in American history, the March on Washington for Jobs and Freedom. That march took place 60 years ago yesterday, on August 28th, 1963. The organizers of the march, including Dr. Martin Luther King,
A. Philip Randolph, Dr. Dorothy Height, and so many other giants of that generation, brought a list of 10 demands for Congress. The very first one called for comprehensive and effective civil rights legislation to guarantee all Americans decent housing, among other rights. The organizers knew what Eleanor Roosevelt knew, and what all of us here today know, that a safe, stable space to call home is the essential foundation from which all other possibilities, all other opportunities can grow. That call to action remains just as relevant and important today, and not just for Congress, but for all of us. Last night, I arrived in Orlando from Washington, D.C., where I had the great honor of speaking at the 60th anniversary March on Washington over the weekend. On Saturday morning, I stood shoulder to shoulder with tens of thousands of people as we marched the same route that a quarter of a million people marched all those decades ago. We celebrated the legacies of those who courageously walked before us, of those who opened doors that for centuries had been shut for certain communities. But we also lamented how far we have to go to build just, inclusive, and equitable systems, especially in housing. In the decades since the March on Washington and the civil rights legislation that followed, including the Civil Rights Act of 1964 and the Fair Housing Act of 1968, tragically, access to affordable housing remains out of reach for far too many people here in the U.S. The COVID-19 pandemic exposed the crisis when 40 million people across the country suddenly faced the terrible threat of eviction. It was only because of the federal eviction moratorium and a patchwork of state and local protections that many people were able to stay in their homes. These emergency orders marked the very first time that our government tied eviction to public health. The law at last acknowledged how losing our homes can leave us vulnerable to sickness and other harmful health outcomes. Since those protections have expired, and as inflation and interest rates have surged ever higher, evictions are again on the rise. Some cities are seeing eviction filings increase by more than 60%. And meanwhile, recent reports have found that renters must make double the federal minimum wage, and in some cases even more, to afford a two-bedroom house in every state across the country. Home ownership is increasingly out of reach too, especially here in Florida, and you all know this better than me. The Florida Policy Project found that from 2015 to 2022, the median home price in Florida rose from under $300,000 to $450,000. Meanwhile, from 2019 to 2021, the median household income dropped from around $67,000 to under $60,000. And there's no relief in sight. Housing prices are expected to continue rising as insurance companies withdraw from Florida. Electricity bills are going up, and more people are flocking to the state. For the first time since 1957, Florida has topped the U.S. Census Bureau's list of fastest-growing cities, states, with more than 1,100 people moving here every day, which is like adding a city bigger than Orlando every year. It's no wonder why. Few places capture the imagination like Florida. It is an idea as much as a place. And it has been a destination for people in search of a new life, in search of a sunny paradise for decades. But it's going to take work to keep that dream in reach for everyone. The consequences of a housing crisis touch nearly every aspect of our lives. The racial wealth gap remains stubbornly in place, a gap that is largely attributable to federal housing policy in the 20th century. That further narrows educational and employment opportunities for historically marginalized communities. And more people are being forced out into the streets, left with no options for affordable housing at all. As the visibility of the unhoused population grows, so too does public backlash. At the Southern Poverty Law Center, we're concerned by two emerging and deeply connected trends. The first is the growing criminalization of the unhoused, an already displaced population. These laws punish people for engaging in life-sustaining behavior, like sleeping in public places where they're forced to live, making their very existence a crime. Punishments range from fines to forced hospitalization to jail time, all premised on the misguided belief that we can end homelessness if we simply make it a crime. As though homelessness were a personal choice, a personal failure, instead of a predictable consequence of treating housing as a privilege rather than a human right. This targeting and stigmatizing of unhoused people has also contributed to the second trend, the rise in violence against these people. Years ago, Florida led the nation in reported attacks on the homeless in cities all across the state. In response, the state took the important step of designating homelessness as a protected class under the state's hate crimes legislation. More states should be following your lead today. Everything I've just outlined underscores the urgency for creating safe housing and economic opportunity for people today, and it begs the question, what if we understood housing as a human right? What would it take to make safe, stable housing a possibility for all people who aspire to it, while at the same time investing in opportunity, growth, and innovation in our communities? First and foremost, I think we can all agree that it will take extraordinary collaboration between impacted communities, advocates, homeowners, developers, and local and state governments. In other words, people like all of you in this room. I want to lift up the Florida Housing Coalition for leading on that front and for serving as a collaborative hub, bringing so many voices to the table. It's a testament to the success and the necessity of this coalition that the 2023 conference is the largest in its history. The SPLC has also proudly been part of some collaborative transformational projects here in Florida. But before I talk about that, I'd like to share a little bit about the organization's history and a new era of work that we're beginning. The SPLC was founded more than 50 years ago, not long after the nation celebrated passage of landmark civil rights laws. But as you know, the promise of these laws did not always guarantee real protections in people's lives. Resistance to progress was strong, especially in the Deep South. Racial discrimination and violence cast long shadows in places like Alabama, where we're headquartered, and Mississippi. Black, brown, Asian Americans, and others historically pushed to the margins were still excluded from good jobs, fair housing, quality education, and other opportunities. And people had little recourse to demand justice. Our co-founders sought to change that. And so in 1971, they formally incorporated our organization. During our first few decades, we took on cases that few others at the time were willing to pursue. Cases that stress-tested civil rights laws, held institutions of power accountable, and challenged and even bankrupted some of the most hateful factions across the South. Today, that legacy of fighting for racial equity and civil rights in the Deep South is more important than at any other time in our modern history. To meet the moment, we've launched a new era of work to build power for multiracial, inclusive democracy. Under that change, we're leading litigation and advocacy efforts to transform systems and support innovative, community-driven solutions for protecting human rights. And that brought us to Eatonville, Florida. Just 6 or so miles north of where we're gathered now, Eatonville was one of the first all-Black incorporated communities with autonomous Black city governments in the United States. Today, it is the only one that survives. Known as the town that freedom built, Eatonville was founded in 1887 by 27 Black men on land sold to them by a former Union Army Captain, Josiah Eaton. It served as a model of what's possible when people have the means and opportunity to build good homes and communities. Eatonville is where the queen of the Harlem Renaissance, author Zora Neale Hurston, grew up, and the town serves as a backdrop to her most famous work. In its heyday, Eatonville drew performances from B.B. King, Cab Calloway, and Duke Ellington. The town also became a center for Black learning. The heart of Eatonville was a Black vocational school on a sprawling campus founded with the help of Booker T. Washington. It drew Black students from near and far to educational opportunities that they were denied in the white-run world outside. The school property, which makes up 14% of the town, is now in the possession of the local school board in Orange County, which closed the school in 2009. When community activists in Eatonville first requested assistance from the SPLC, the board was on the verge of selling the property for a commercial and housing development. Many residents opposed the plan because it threatened to displace and gentrify the town, a town that is still 73% Black and proudly under majority Black leadership 136 years after its founding. The SPLC is working collaboratively to ensure responsible economic development of this land in a way that benefits the community. The community won a reprieve when the developer decided to terminate the sales agreement. Separately, there is ongoing litigation over the future use of the property, property that has been dedicated in law and in practice to educational purposes for more than 100 years. Residents are advocating to preserve the land in a way that safeguards the community's future, while also allowing it to remain a center of Black learning, education, and cultural development. I want to recognize our local partners, including the Association to Preserve the Eatonville Community, led by N.Y. Nathiri, who are planning the economic development of their community in a way that is rich in culture and history, a vision for an Eatonville Renaissance. There is also a collaborative effort by local legal organizations and community organizers who are working in Eatonville to address heirs' property issues. They seek to ensure that people can hold onto their land and build generational wealth and pass it on to their families. Heirs' property, when land is inherited without a clearly designated owner, is the leading cause of involuntary land loss among Black communities because the land does not have a clear or transferable title. Heirs' property is estimated to make up 1/3 of Black-owned land in the South, worth billions of dollars. This important work is fundamentally about economic justice, ensuring that the benefits of land ownership are shared equally by all. We're hopeful that collaborations like these will prove to be effective processes for ensuring we're upholding the dignity of place and people while creating economic opportunities from which we all benefit. The history of Eatonville runs deep, and it's a history that, like much of Black history in the United States, it's little taught, little known, and little acknowledged. But the story of towns like Eatonville are the American story. And the SPLC is proud to partner with the local community to make sure it's preserved. All of us here today, we're here because we care about helping people find a safe place to call home. To achieve that, we need more robust federal protections and resources to promote housing stability and help communities thrive. But federal action alone will not get us there. Local governments and community members must be empowered to act. We also can't ignore the ways in which natural disasters and our response to them shape housing in this state and beyond. We need investments in infrastructure, high-quality housing, and disaster relief now, so we have the strong foundation to withstand the extreme weather to come. Access to housing is a national emergency, but I know that we can make progress together. Before I close, I'd like to invite each of you to close your eyes for just a few seconds. And imagine, for just a moment, a world where everyone has a place to call home, where every parent feels safe putting their child to bed, where every person feels welcome in their own space. Isn't that a world worth pursuing together? Eleanor Roosevelt, in her remarks at the UN, ended her reflection on the nature of human rights by saying, "Without concerned citizen action to uphold human rights close to home, we shall look in vain for progress in the larger world." There is so much power, passion, and influence concentrated in this room. All of you are intimately connected to realizing this fundamental human right. Let's harness that collective power, and let's work with local communities to improve the lives of everyone who calls Florida home. Thank you, and I wish you a safe journey to your homes.